Welcome to Nationalist Public Radio, Words from the End of the West, with your hosts, Everett Foster, Roderick Kane, James Price, and Brett Stevens. Welcome to Nationalist Public Radio. On this episode, my co-host James Price and I interview a Jewish ethno-nationalist who believes that white people should have the right to an ethno-state of their own. Please welcome Laura Loomer.
Hello, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you on. Thanks for coming out.
Why don't you start this off with sort of a little introduction? Why don't you just give a sort of bio about yourself, how you got started in journalism?
I began my career as an investigative journalist in college, around my junior year of college, really. And my senior year of college, I started working with James O'Keefe at Project Veritas. And when I was in college, I did a few different investigations, but I did an investigation at my university in which I created a fake ISIS club in order to, you know, just prove how absurd a lot of the political correctness and this love for Islam was on college campuses. And I ended up getting kicked out of college for it. And I moved to New York, started working for James O'Keefe full time, and I worked with Project Veritas for about 3 years doing a wide variety of different investigative videos, ranging from being undercover in the Hillary Clinton campaign for 2 years, in which I exposed a lot of like fraud and corruption with Hillary and her staffers, including Huma Abedin. I traveled to Greece and I exposed fraud among illegal Syrian refugees who were talking about using fake passports to come to America and invade Europe. I exposed Al Sharpton. I did a lot of different things. I exposed the election commissioner of New York City and ultimately really helped Donald Trump win the presidential election, because if you think about it, the greatest October surprise last year was the Project Veritas video. I left Project Veritas because I wanted to be more public, and I went to go work with The Rebel for about 2 or 3 months, and protested the normalization of political violence against the right. But then when I wanted to go after Hillary Clinton and I confronted her at her book signing, Rebel wasn't too supportive of that and told me that I wasn't allowed to continue reporting on Hillary Clinton. So I resigned. Hillary Clinton?
Yeah.
I mean, she was embarrassed, so you can watch the video, but I definitely got her pretty good. I got Chelsea Clinton pretty well, too, so that was fun. And Huma as well. I did chase Huma Abedin down the street and talk to her about her pedophile husband. But they didn't want me covering it, so I ended up resigning from The Rebel because I don't like being told what I can and can't report on and what I can and can't say. I'm very unfiltered, so it doesn't work really well for me. And now I'm independent.
Laura just discovered America.org.
Yeah.
Ago. First, you discovered Nenus.com.
Well, I just thought you were a troll at first because I get this like random phone call from this guy when I'm like having breakfast. I don't know. You called me, and he's like, I didn't even know how you got my number, and it was like super weird. And I was like, oh, who are you? And then he told me that he wanted me to go on some alt-right podcast. And I was like, oh God, here we go again. I was very hesitant at first, and I did blow him off and ignore his text messages, but he kept on texting me, and I was like, all right, I guess I'll. So
I didn't keep texting you.
You did. You sent me a link for anus.com, and I was like, this has got to be a troll. But I clicked on it, and anus.com, long behold, is like a legitimate website. I thought it was going to be like some Pornhub site, but you proved me wrong. You can imagine how I feel. Like, the Nazi LARPers and other people in the alt-right love targeting me. And so when he says, I want you to go on my alt-right podcast and sends me a link for anus.com, I was like, okay, like, get the fuck out of here. This is ridiculous. But it all worked out. So
I think anus.com, Mrs. Collins, is a porn site at this point. Well, in no words, Brett, didn't you say that anus would never be taken seriously by conservatives? That's why you sort of rebranded under America?
Oh, definitely. We had a lot of trouble because you'd send people links and they'd be like, I'm not clicking on that. That's got to be something really deviant.
Well, it was so deviant. And he goes, oh, did you check it out? And I'm like, I feel really uncomfortable clicking on anus.com. I was like, I'm just going to get all these weird like images. And it was just very strange. But
maybe in another time.
But then I met him and he's normal. And, you know, here we
are. Thank you. She called me a sweetheart on Twitter.
Ooh, we have the same thing at America that you probably deal with, which is because we're not really Hitlarpers, there's a certain audience that any time the site or any of our writings are mentioned can be counted on to have sort of an emotional tantrum and call us all sorts of names, basically, which is kind of hilarious, but also gets kind of old. So I imagine you deal with the same thing.
So basically, you know what we're about, in a nutshell.
In a nutshell, yeah.
So you are about ethno-nationalism. I think we talked about this earlier.
Right.
You basically said in your words, and you can kind of elaborate here.
Right.
You identify as a civic nationalist right now.
Yeah, but I don't oppose ethno-nationalism, right? Yeah. Like, I'm a Jew, and I'm pro-Israel, and I would be a hypocrite if I were to say that I was against ethno-nationalism, because Israel is an ethno-state, and it's a great country. It's a great place. I totally support ethno-nationalism. Someone asked me, are you pro-white nationalism? Yes, I'm pro-white nationalism, but there's a difference between white nationalism and white supremacy, right? And a lot of liberals and left-wing globalist Marxist Jews don't understand that. It's really not a hard concept to understand that white nationalism and white supremacy are not the same thing, right? So this country really was built as a white Judeo-Christian ethno-state, essentially. Over time, immigration and all these calls for diversity, it's starting to destroy this country. I don't oppose people who say that they want to have their own ethno-state, or I don't see anything wrong with white nationalism, but you need effective leaders, people who aren't Richard Spencer, people who aren't James Alsup, to effectively convey that message, because you guys may not see it in your own echo chamber, but like for other people who are witnessing this, they give off this very cringy, anti-Semitic, white supremacist vibe, whether or not you guys want to admit it or not. I'm telling you right now that as a Jew, I'm totally in favor of ethno-nationalism, and I don't have a problem with you guys wanting to have a white ethno-state, but your leadership sucks.
Brett, maybe you want to elaborate on that, on our position.
White nationalism is a very vague term, and I'm familiar with the white nationalist movement of the 90s, which I thought was a little bit unhinged, focusing a lot more on symbolic goals than on actual goals. The broader principle that really we all need to focus on is the fact that diversity doesn't work. This leads into one of my questions here for Laura. We are in a multicultural society, and I feel like we're in a state of paradox. The question arises, how does a multicultural society reconcile people who hate Jews and Muslims with Jews and Muslims who hate Jews? Is there any way out of that paradox, do you think?
No, because, I mean, I'm not really a big fan of this idea that we need to coexist, right? Because you can't really coexist with people who want to kill you. And unfortunately, the left, and like I said, like the left-wing Jews in this country, especially, like, they are under this false impression that we can have peace with Islamists, with Muslims, and other hostile people who have been raised. It's basically, like, ingrained in them. It's almost ingrained in their DNA at this point in time to hate and want to kill everything that does not want to submit, right, to Islam. You know, I don't think that it's okay for people to keep promoting this false idea that we'll be able to coexist, and that diversity and multiculturalism is actually helping this country, because it's not, right? It's destroying this country.
I guess what's dangerous as well is this assumption of compatibility that the leftists have.
Well, you don't need to be compatible. The thing with the left is, like, they don't want anyone to have, like, their own sense of identity. They want there to be, like, a shared identity or, like, this big melting pot, and that's what I'm opposed to. Because what originally was the majority of this country, what this country was founded on, is now becoming a threat or a minority. And the people who were originally in this country, the people who this country was built for, they're almost viewed as being problematic now, and that shouldn't be the case. These trigger words like multiculturalism, diversity, whatever you want to call it, it's destructive. And in the long run, it doesn't really have a positive impact, because what are you going to do? Are you going to promote it so that every single marriage is like an interracial or like mixed race? Not that I'm opposed to like interracial or mixed race marriages, but are you going to have it so that like no one really has like their own set identity? Do you want everyone to have a shared identity and not really be able to identify with one set culture or one group? When I talk about this with people, I'll give you an example. Like, I'm totally against Muslims and Jews mixing. I'm totally against it. I don't support it. I do not think that Muslims and Jews should marry. I don't think that they should reproduce with each other. I'm totally against it. And we see why, right? It's like a catastrophic identity crisis. What are you going to do? You're going to raise a child who's going to be like half Jewish, half Muslim? Like, who are they going to identify with?
Right now, you identify as a civic nationalist. but it kind of seems like if there was more sanity in the all right, where you didn't have Hitler barbers, that sort of Spencer brand of all right, would you consider yourself publicly as an ethno-nationalist?
I'm not opposed to ethno-nationalism. I don't have an issue with that aspect of the alt-right. It's just, I used to consider myself, my Twitter bio in the past, a while back, used to say alt-right. But I deleted it because I started to realize it became a very hostile environment for Jews. And they didn't seem to want me on their team. They didn't want, they didn't want to include me. And then when they started Zeke Heiling and, you know, all these like Hitler memes and Hitler shit posting became a really big aspect of it. I had to let go. Because, yeah, I can't stand for that. Yeah, like I said, I don't oppose ethno-nationalism. Like, a lot of Jews don't want to say that. Like, the problem I have is, and this is why I understand a lot of their frustrations with some Jewish people, is that you have a lot of Jews who say, oh, ethno-nationalism, like, you can't have that. You can't have ethno-nationalism. Like, the left-wing Jews in this country will say, you can't have, you know, white nationalism or white pride, because that's just not okay. You need to be inclusive. But what about Israel? But the thing they don't understand about those people who are saying, like the Jewish people who are saying, we don't support your ethno-nationalism, they're not even really pro-Israel. You can't be pro-Israel and then also be promoting like immigration in Israel. You can't consider yourself to be pro-Israel and also be pushing and giving resources to pro-Muslim, pro-Islam advocacy. It doesn't work that way. Sure. These people are not really Jews. Like, they call themselves, but they're not. That's why it bothers me so much, is because a lot of people, especially in the alt-right, they'll say, oh, well, there's too much Jewish influence or too many Jewish interests. Well, most people really aren't looking out for Jewish influence or Jewish interests. They're just calling themselves Jews. If you look at their allegiance and their alliances, they align with people who are totally anti-Israel and, you know, more pro-Islam. Their interests are more pro-Muslim, pro-Islam, instead of pro-Israel. And I've been speaking out against this, but unfortunately, a lot of damage has been done. And some people just aren't willing to accept that there's a difference between right-wing Jews and left-wing Jews.
What are your thoughts on that contradiction, though, Brett?
It's always the big question. Can we have ethno-nationalism without going down the path that Hitler and others went? And my answer is yes, because I think that at some point, ideology is allegiance to Sauron, right? You can't share it with anything else. So if you say, I'm X and Y happens to be anything leftist, it's going to take over whatever else you're doing. We used to see this in the environmental movement. We'd refer to people as watermelons because they were green on the outside, red on the inside. If you have somebody who's interested in saving the trees and they start talking at all about leftism, pretty soon it's going to be turned the other way around. You're going to have someone who's interested in leftism with a side garnish of a little bit of environmentalism. I freely admit to watching Ben Shapiro videos, and I enjoy a lot of his stuff, and he basically made the same point more eloquently than I have, where he said, basically, the tenets of Judaism are in conflict with leftism, which seems correct to me from the little that I know, and that if you were a leftist Jew, you were basically a leftist sort of with a Jew spray painted on instead of being a Jewish person who happened to be leftist. Like, you can't reconcile these two things, and one is going to dominate, and then you're going to take that path or the other. So, I mean, I guess my question there would be, is there a way for ethno-nationalism to move forward? And is it possible to do this in a nonviolent way? And is it possible to do this without getting taken over by leftists? And I just mentioned this in the side context of, like, what do you do with the problem like Palestinians when you are an ethno-state and you've got this foreign population among you that not all of them want to kill you, but enough of them do? So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, they're not legitimate people. They're not legitimate. You have to keep them out, right? Like, I mean, I don't know. It's like very controversial, and a lot of people are going to be very offended by what I'm saying. But that's another thing, is like, you are automatically deemed a racist or an Islamophobe if you want to be like assertive about, you know, your borders. You cannot be a legitimate nation unless you have sovereignty, and you can't be a sovereign nation unless you forcefully and effectively declare and label your borders. You just can't. So for some reason, this was widely accepted many, many years ago. Many years ago, nations had no problem asserting their borders and no problems declaring their sense of nationalism. But now it's becoming taboo, right? Like, you can't do that. And why is that, right? Like, what is the point of having different nations, different countries, different governments if we're not going to uphold borders? Like, it's just very basic, right? And people are trying to change like the fundamental fabric of this world. The main thing that like makes a country a country, right, and like separates it from other places, other bodies of land, bodies of water, are borders, right? There's nothing wrong with labeling your borders and asserting your borders and protecting your borders. And how did we get to a point in history where you are a bigot if you want to protect your border?
It seems to me the left has always loved the idea of a world government, whether the UN or world federalism or something like that. They've always kind of been chomping at the bit for that. So it seems to me that what they want to do is eliminate those national identities.
And that's what they're doing. But it's just not logical. And it's funny if you think about it, because you mentioned the United Nations. You have these people. I mean, it's got to be the most incompetent, corrupt, useless organization in the world. But the funniest part about it is it's full of people who are pushing for open borders, but then they designate themselves and they separate themselves according to like regions and blocks and like by countries. So they don't want borders, but they want to continue to separate themselves into different blocks, like the Arab bloc. You know, it's just everything that they do and their operational procedures is just totally contrary to the policies and the philosophy, the worldview that they push forward. So I always find it to be rather ironic when you look at the UN nations and how they make such an effort to separate themselves and label out their countries and organize themselves and portray their flags. And what is the point of even showing your flag or taking pride in your flag or labeling your seat for the country you belong to if you really do push this open border philosophy? Do you see the hypocrisy in that? I mean, the entire setup, when I see it on TV, because they really do take, there's a structure, there's this procedure, and they're like strict about it too. And you look at the way that their meetings are orchestrated and carried out, and they make an effort in the meetings to distinguish, like, you know, which leaders sit together and which countries are here, which countries are there. And what is the point of doing that if you're pushing for open borders?
Do you think it's just hypocrisy, or do you think it's game playing? Meaning, do you think they're trying to induce other countries to self-destruct by adopting these policies that they will then not apply to themselves?
Well, I think it's both, but first and foremost, it's definitely hypocrisy. They make such an effort during these meetings to distinguish themselves from other people in other countries, but isn't that totally contrary to like the multicultural and diversity policies and guidelines that they're trying to push upon other nations? Why are you trying to separate yourself and make such a distinction from other nations and other leaders? And this country has this human rights violation, and this country is labeled or numbered as this much better than this country. Like, what is the point? Why does that even matter if we're just all trying to, you know, become one giant melting pot or one world? Essentially, that's what George Soros wants. He wants one world, an open society, a world free of borders. It's so much hypocrisy.
It seems to me that what they're trying to do is divide up the world by who's in power in different places, and they don't really care about the people underlying that. And I guess for me, one of the things is right now we're caught sort of in a time of defensive ethno-nationalism where we're saying, please don't globalize us. We'd like to be who we are. Mm-hmm. I feel like oftentimes we've lost sight of the positive aspects of it, the preservation of culture, the ability to have, well, actual diversity, where you go to a different country and there's different people speaking a different language and all the signs aren't in English and all the customs are different. Do you talk much about that? Do you think much about, I guess, positive ethno-nationalism, for lack of a better term?
In what sense? Like being among people like you, or going places, being able to go somewhere with people like you? Like, yeah, I think about it because you like having a sense of identity, right? That's why I like Israel so much. I love going to Israel when I get the chance. I like being around Jewish people. I like being around people who share my same viewpoints about Muslims, right? Like, it's nice being around people who are like you. I don't know what, you know, like the liberals in this country don't seem to like being around people like themselves. Maybe they hate themselves, right? Maybe they carry a lot of guilt for being white or whatever they are, but I am not guilty, right? I love being Jewish, and I love being around people who are just like me. I don't have an issue being around other people, but like, obviously you're going to feel more comfortable around people who share like your same policies, who share your same politics, who share your same background, and it just makes life easier. The Jews can want that for themselves. Like, why can't other people want it for themselves? I am not opposed to that, right? I'm Jewish, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you, yeah, like, let me have my ethno state, but no, you can't have that because that's racist, right? Like, I'm totally fine with the people having ethno states, but unfortunately, I don't have $23 billion like George Soros, so I don't get to be the representative for a lot of the Jews. It's also a disgrace as well, right? Because here he is, and he's totally defamed the Jewish people, and he's given us such a bad rap because of all the destruction and the negativity he's financed and all of these you know, like destructive social justice movements, but like he shouldn't even be a Jew. And he was literally a Nazi collaborator, right? So for people to even reference him as a Jew, it's honestly an embarrassment to the Jewish people, because this guy literally aided and collaborated with the Nazis to save himself, right? So he's a selfish bastard, and he doesn't have any morals, and he doesn't have any courage, and he literally sold out to the Nazis to protect himself when other people sacrificed themselves to save other Jews. And if you talk about ethno-nationalism and identity, it's about fighting for your own. George Soros, he didn't fight for his own. It's insulting for me when people try to associate with him with Judaism and the Jewish people, because he didn't really fight for us. He's fighting to create open borders so that more Palestinians can come in and murder Jews, and for open borders so that more Muslims can come to this country and push their jihad on Americans and openly practice anti-Semitism under the disguise of diversity or multiculturalism or cultural enrichment. So I'm not a fan.
One of the bigger questions rising from that is, do you think that the rise of a nationalist power in Europe or the United States would necessarily involve bad consequences for the Jewish people? Could we all be ethno-nationalist friends?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not advocating for everybody to be, like, excommunicated, right? Like, everyone go here, if you're, all the Jews go to Israel, like, but that's not what I'm advocating for. What I'm saying is, like, people have a right to openly express these opinions and these policies and desire these policies without being labeled as a racist or a bigot or having to fear for being fired or ostracized in their own community. I'm not advocating for this at the moment. I'm not saying, like, kick everyone besides white people out of Europe. What I'm saying is people should be able to have these political opinions and, like, openly share them without being ostracized or fired, like a lot of people have been, right? I mean, people feel like they have to live in the closet because these opinions, it's like being a homosexual, right? Like, when you have opinions like this, you're either, like, super flamboyant about it and you want everyone to know, or you are hiding in the closet because you don't want people to know about what you think, right? It's, like, very much like homosexuality. You know, I think that people should be free to express this opinion because it's really not that far-fetched. I mean, that's what this country was founded on, and people don't want to admit it, but that's our history.
To some degree, it would be great if we had a little more of that freedom inside the alt-right, where it's sort of paradoxical to say we're a world nationalist movement, but it seems to me that it is, because I think people in a lot of countries are picking up on that, being like, yeah, I'd like that for my people.
Like, I think it's so funny that the media is calling the Polish people fascists after everything they went through. I mean, it's just incredible to see how much ignorance there is, like historical ignorance. You know, sooner or later, if they start calling everybody fascist, everyone's going to become numb to it. So when actual fascists show up, right, like, no one's going to really care, or that's not going to have any. They should be careful, but, like, about using the word Nazi and fascist to describe people don't agree with them, because if people like that actually do come up again, and I do believe that it's going to come back, but it's not going to be in that form. It's going to present itself in the form of Islam, and it already is. What are we going to call them, right? Well, what is the term that we're going to have for those people? That's also part of their tactic. It's to, like, numb people to those words, so that when the actual threat does present itself, and it is coming more aggressively, it's not just these Trojan horse tactics like we've seen before, there's not going to be a word to describe it, because they're going to have abused all of the terms used to label threats and people who try to, like, use force and censorship and violence to suppress differences in political opinion. But I do believe that the next threat, it's not the Nazis, it's not the fascists, it's the Islamists, it's the Muslims.
I know that Steve Bannon thinks we're in some sort of period called a fourth turning, where there's going to be a shift of global power and a change in who the empires in control are and in the world order. Do you think something like that is coming?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're already undergoing something like that. I was with Steve Bannon the other night. Met him here in New York. But yeah, I think that we're already experiencing that, but people don't want to admit it, because people who are the force behind that movement have now become the most protected class of people in the world, right? The Muslims, the Islamists, they've become untouchables in a sense. So here it is. They've created this power structure in which you can't criticize your oppressor. And that's what they are. They're oppressors. They come here, they refuse to assimilate, and they want us to all submit. And if we refuse to submit to Islam, we refuse to submit to Allah, they kill us. Or they terrorize us. And what is that called? What is that called when you are killed or when you are threatened or punished for not obeying your oppressor?
Hypocrisy is the UN themselves had it.
But what do we call that? What do we call that?
They had some wording for it.
No, but it's not that complicated. I'm saying, what do we call it? It's just it doesn't have to come down to like official, you know, like documents. It's just like what do you call that?
Tyranny.
Exactly. But what are they calling the, what are they trying to accuse Trump of being? They're trying to accuse Trump of being like a tyrant, right? Or this as being some crazy regime. You see what I'm saying? We actually are experiencing tyranny, but it's not in the form of the Trump-Pence quote-unquote regime as of the leftists and these unhinged individuals want us to believe. We're experiencing tyranny in the form of diversity and really immigration, right? Because we're importing it. We're importing tyrants. And sooner or later, like, we're not even going to be the majority. Like, white people in this country, they're not going to be the majority. English is not going to be the most, common or dominant language. It's not going to be the case. But it's funny.
We're already seeing that in Sweden as well, aren't we? I think I just saw it the other day.
All the signs are in Arabic. And I saw it the other day on Twitter, too. I have my Twitter set to like U.S. trends, right? And I bounce back and forth between like local and like national trends. Three of the trending topics of like the 13 trending topics were in Arabic in the United States. Why is Arabic even trending as like one of the topics? And I tweet this out and people don't seem to get it.
Thank you for listening to Nationalist Public Radio. For James Price and Brett Stevens in New York.